Sports Radio 730, The Ump, and 103.9 FM. From the Tennessee Valley's Sports Authority, Sports Radio 730, The Ump presents The Griff Show with Scott Griffin. Call now, 1-866-485-WUMP. That's 1-866-485-9867. Now, kicking your afternoon drive into high gear. Here's Griff.
Welcome in to the Griff Show. We are glad you're with us here on a very important day here. A lot of stuff going on. We're the day before the SEC tournament. We'll talk a lot of basketball today. We'll also talk a lot of Peyton Manning. You'll hear a lot of thoughts from Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning today, as well as much more here on the Griff Show. And we're glad you've tuned into the program. A lot of open lines today, a lot of interviews going on as well. The number is always to get in on the show, 866-485-WUMP, 866-485-9867. 14 years, 150 wins, which places him fourth, by the way, all time as a starter, and one Super Bowl title, and Peyton Manning is gone with the Indianapolis Colts. 14 years. I'm going to guess, Jason, when Peyton Manning started and was getting good, you weren't even a teenager yet. And I'm not saying that to make fun, but just to give kind of credibility to how long he's been an Indianapolis Colt, right? I mean, wow. So, very interesting. The timeline with the Colts and Jim Irsay. 14 years in one place. Amazing. We'll have thoughts from those guys as the show goes. Manning, of course, for neck operations, the team 2-14. Indianapolis cutting him, releasing him to avoid paying him a $28 million bonus. Although Irsay and Manning say it wasn't about money. Well, if it's $2 million, I guarantee you they would have kept him. So they can say that all they want. But they, you know, are not being realistic because it is about $28 million. It may not totally be about money, but it is basically about other things. 866-485-9867, as well as money, I should say. Because let's face it, if it was $1 million, they'd have kept him. If it was $3 million, they'd have kept him, right? So don't tell me it's not about money. $28 million was a lot of reason to not do it. So that's not being accurate to me, right? I mean, if you disagree, call up and we'll talk about it. But to me, $28 million is a very big reason. About what? At least $23 million of it is big enough. He might have kept him for $5 million. In any event, the Colts are rebuilding. They're getting older. They got a lot of free agents, and that'll be that. Manning said he'll always be a Colt. I'll always be. That'll never change. But don't think for a second he won't go try to beat the Colts' brains in when he plays for somebody else. Four Most Valuable Player awards. That's a record. 50,000 yards passing, 200 consecutive starts. But he now will wear the helmet of the Cardinals, the Dolphins, perhaps the Titans, maybe the Redskins, long shot the Jets. Who knows? Who knows who he'll be wearing the helmet for? So we'll have reaction from that, your reaction as well, from the Colts releasing Peyton Manning as we go here on the program. Also, Pro Day at the University of Alabama, a chance for a lot of guys to show how they've improved perhaps from the combine or give even more validity to that, and then for some other guys too as well. Auburn had their Pro Day yesterday, Alabama today. All 32 teams represented at Alabama today. Auburn's, of course, lacked the sizzle a little bit. They didn't have the Fairleys and the Cam Newtons. Brandon Mosley was really the only surefire draft pick among the nine draft-eligible players at Auburn. Nico Thorpe possibly could be a late-round pick. But at Alabama, of course, we're talking five possible first-rounders. Now, Trent Richardson, Courtney Upshaw, and Mark Barron were not there today. Richardson still coming back from that knee injury. Barron, of course, had some surgery. They'll be working out in separate pro days later on. Courtney Upshaw, you know, I think he's done everything you can ask and more. Dre Kirkpatrick has seen his stock slip. He was out there trying to impress the pro scouts today a little bit more than he did at the combine. So several Bama guys there today. We'll have thoughts from Nick Saban coming up a little bit later as well on the show to see how those guys did as well. 866-485-9867, 866-485-WUMP to get in on the program. By the way, Jack Del Rio, the former head coach of the Jaguars, was there. He's now the defensive coordinator. A lot of times they'd send scouts. But sometimes they'll send guys like that, and Jack Del Rio certainly wanting to shore up the Broncos' defense himself. Six of the combine guys performed today. Again, we gave you the three, but that weren't there. Marquise Mays worked out, did not run the 40, still got that hamstring problem. Daquan Menzie turned in a 4.66 today, better than his 4.74 that he ran at Indianapolis, which is entirely too slow. And he could be a free safety. A free safety, he's fine. A cornerback, that's a bit slow. Darius Hanks ran a 4.69 today, 4.66 in Indianapolis. Josh Chapman did do the bench press, and he did 225 29 times. Dante Hightower was measured at 6 foot tall. I find that hard to believe. He looks way taller than that. That's how tall I am. He insisted he's 6'3". I don't know how he could be off 3 inches. William Vallejos worked out today. Was not invited to Indianapolis, but worked out today. He's up to 319 pounds. He'll also lift March 29th on another pro day with Trent Richardson. He ran the 40 in 5.27. Again, why that matters for a center, I don't know. Jarrell Harris ran a 4.81. Alex Watkins, 4.78. Cornerback Phelan Jones, 4.65. Brad Smelly, 5. What's sad is Alfred McCullough from Athens High School, the big man, guard and tackle, ran a 4.82.40. Faster than Brad Smelly. How about that? The nose guard, Nick Gentry, who made so many plays for Alabama, 5.66. Now, if you're thinking, man, that's slow, remember the 40 times you hear for high schools and all these things, they're not real, okay? These 4.2s and 4.3, they're not real, folks. They're not. There's not many 4.4s out there. You may say somebody's a 4.44, but they're not real. They're not real. So these sound slow because they're real. there you go. 866-485-9867, 866-485-WUMP to get in on the show. Let's hear a little bit from Ursae and Manning, too. We got a lot of headlines going on here. And Jim Irsay, the decision process for him obviously could not be easy. Now, the $28 million that they owned owed him probably made it a heck of a lot easier, as we said. But it's still hard to get rid of the guy that's basically Mr. Colt. Here's Jim Irsay's thought.
This process has been a long, difficult process. I know Peyton and I have had numerous conversation over the months, and we always kept trying to come back to the circumstances that were before us.
All right, that is Jim Irsay. We'll have more from those guys in a moment. Let's go to Joe in Huntsville. It's called The Griff Show, 14 after 3 o'clock. Joe, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
How are you? What's going on?
Good. I got a question about the Peyton Manning. I just want your opinion. You know, I heard that, you know, I guess whenever Manning decides to play with another team, it's not money driven. So, I mean, I think I've read somewhere that he's made like $180 million over his career with the Colts. Obviously, he doesn't need the money. Why did they not just, if it's not about the money, why did Peyton just say, hey, look, you know, with the whole salary cap, whatever, you know, I'll just play for, I'm not saying the minimum, but, you know, it just, you know, I don't know, $6 million a year or something. And why can't we get this Andrew Luck guy in here? Obviously, Peyton Manning's been known as one of the best studiers of the game, learners of the game. Why couldn't they just say, hey, look, do you want to stay a Colt and retire a Colt? Why don't, you know, we'll keep you here. And why do they want to rush Andrew Luck in so quick? I mean, what if they rush this kid in and he turns out to be a Ryan Leaf, or he turns out to be Jesse Palmer. So you know what I mean?
I don't think he will be, but he could. You're right. I mean, we don't know anything. Yeah. Do we see him? And what about the immense pressure of being the guy that replaces Peyton Manning in Indianapolis?
Right.
Can you do enough to be accepted there? That's what's going to be difficult on any quarterback coming in, especially the guy, because he's going to be seen as the guy that replaced Peyton Manning in more ways than one. The guy that made the Colts go, yeah, we don't want Manning. We got the first pick of the draft. So the pressure is double now, besides just replacing a guy that may have retired or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
it's
very difficult, but I once you've earned a certain amount of money and you've done what you can do, I don't blame Peyton Manning for not playing for $6 million. Now, could he have taken less? Sure, he could have. But
that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, if he said, well, where he goes next is not going to be money-driven, which I understand that. But, you know, like when Steve Young replaced Montana, I mean, it's not like Steve Young was a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid. You know, I mean, a lot of these quarterbacks have stayed – waited there, you know, Aaron Rodgers. You know, he had to wait his time out. And, I'm sure, and I know him and Brett Favre didn't have the best of relationships, but I'm sure he learned something from Brett Favre that's made him a, you know, he'd admit it or not. But, you know, why didn't they just say, hey, look, we're going to give you the option. You gave us 14 years. You helped us get where we're at. You want to be a Colt. We're going to retire you as a Colt. We know you only got a couple years left. You know, work this kid in a couple blowout games. Or, you know, what, you know, just, you know, instead of just throwing them out to the wolves and say, here, you know, there you go, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, those are all valid questions, but my guess would be Andrew Luck doesn't want to sit. My other guess is Peyton Manning doesn't want to have anybody behind him ready to do that. Who knows how long in his mind he wants to play. And the Colts have a lot of free agents, so I think that's the understated thing that none of us are discussing, is the fact that Garcon and Wayne are free agents. The fact that they've got a lot of guys that are open for contracts, and they're just looking at it going, you know what, if we're going to rebuild, let's totally rebuild.
Let's do it all at once. You know, I also heard Reggie Wayne, funny you said that, was actually interested in joining Miami. Apparently, you know, he went to the University of Miami. He's got a house or something down there. And I heard that, not that I didn't hear it, but I read it online that through NFL.something that Reggie Wayne was interested in signing with the Dolphins, which could lure. So I hear Peyton Manning's got a home down in Florida or something, and they're saying
he's got a condo, which I find funny, by the way, because when you're earning Peyton Manning's kind of cash, does it make a difference that he has a condo in a town and doesn't in another?
I mean, exactly.
He could buy 10 condos in every NFL town we got. So, but he does have a condo there, and the weather's warm and all those things. I'm sure that'll be a viable one for him to listen to. I've just got this sneaking suspicion. I did have it about the Redskins, but the more I've thought about it, now I'm leaning towards he'll go to the Cardinals. Just a sneaking suspicion. Yeah. But it's a warm weather place like Miami. It's got grass. It's got a dome. We got Larry Fitzgerald. They were in a Super Bowl 2 or 3 years ago. They're not far off. You know, they got a coach that would be willing to let Manning run his stuff. You know, it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. All right, man. I just want to say enjoy the show, man. I listen to you all the time. Drive home from work. I know I'm calling a few times.
Yeah.
You and Jason, y'all do a great job, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. Keep it up. Keep calling, man. And thank you for listening. We appreciate that. Let's go to Nick in Huntsville before we take a break. Nick, how are you? Hey, Nick.
Griff, what's going on, buddy?
Ah, man, just reeling from the Manning news.
Yeah, let me start off by saying this, Griff. Andrew Luck is not going to be a bust, period. There's no Griff, they're not cutting Peyton Manning for RG3. Who are we kidding? They're not cutting Peyton Manning. He would not be released from that team for RG3. For Robert Griffin III. This is Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Okay? And you can't compare him to the last caller had a great call, but you can't compare him, Griff, to Ryan Leaf, because half of the GMs in the league, they didn't like Ryan Leaf. And you go look up Ryan Leaf's stats and look up Andrew Luck, they're not even in the same ballpark. This guy is 6'4", 235, and runs a 4.5 with a really good arm. Not an amazing arm, but a really good arm. But Peyton Manning, Griff, didn't have a tremendous arm. You know?
No, it's Andrew a good arm. It's a good arm, but
it's not tremendous.
Yeah,
you know he can make the throws. He can make the throws in the NFL. And you play these guys, Griff. You don't draft these guys first round to sit on the bench. Cam Newton didn't sit on the bench. You know, Andy Dalton, he played and played pretty good. Cam Newton played outstanding his first year. When you put that kind of money out there, we got to understand we're releasing Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
We have no other quarterbacks, okay? You got to start the guy. And you get him out there and you start him. You're going to have a couple of bad years, but I guarantee you we're going to have 10 to 12 years of him that are great.
Are you talking about Luck?
Of Andrew Luck, yes.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's surefire, but I think he's going to be a very good quarterback because of his athletic ability, the way he throws a very catchable ball, and his mental capabilities. So, but, you know, I mean, I'm not a professional offensive coordinator or anything, you know. So who knows how it will turn out. But I see the validity on the Colts on this, but I also see the validity in Peyton Manning wanting to go play somewhere, and I hope he goes and plays somewhere and does well, you know. But the Colts are really the thing about it is there hasn't been a lot of downtime, so it's going to be hard for them to accept that their star is gone. They had a bad year last year, but this is a team that won what 10, 12 games so many years in a row. They were just penciled them in the playoffs every year, and now we're going to completely rebuild after one bad year. It's going to be hard to sell that in a brand new stadium. It wasn't that long ago Colts fans were wearing paper bags over their heads before
Peyton
Manning
got there. And if you remember, Griff, Colts stand for what did it say? It was an acronym for something. Oh, count on losing this Sunday. That's what the Colts acronym was up there in Indiana, okay? And I'm going to tell you something, Griff. You know that I've been as critical about Jim Irsay as anybody has, with the Hall and Oates tweets, the going back and forth, the hypocrisy, the flip flopping. Okay, but they did it right today, Griff. They did it right today, man. It started with Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning, and those were the only two guys up there. Not the new coach, not the new GM. It was Peyton Manning and Jim Irsay, and they ended it right, and they both ended it very classy, man. I was shocked. I was shocked to see that. It never ends well, Griff. It never does, never. But you got to make the most of it, and I think Peyton Manning handled that very classy today, man.
Yeah, there's no reason. I mean, he understands the Colts' position, I'm sure, and they understand his. He's a competitor, so there's no reason to leave ill will out there, you know. The world's big enough for both of them, and let's go, right? So
you're right.
I agree. All right, good stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Nick. It's 24 after the hour. Buckeye Bob, hang on. You'll be first up out of the break here on The Griff Show, talking a little Peyton Manning reaction. Leaving the Colts, good idea, bad idea? You agree? Which side are you on? It's dividing the country. We'll be back with more of The Griff Show in a moment.
The Griff Show.
And no, I don't feel like I have anything to prove, but nobody loves their job more than I do. Nobody loves playing quarterback more than I do, and I still want to play.
And he's good at it. He can make, if he's close to normal, any team a competitive team immediately. You don't think he makes receivers better? Look at all the slot receivers that played for the Colts. Brandon Stokely, Anthony Gonzalez, some of those guys. Good football players. Don't want to take anything away from them, but how much better are they with Peyton Manning throwing the football? You think Dallas Clark is an all-pro tight end if, I don't know, name somebody that's an average. If Rex Grossman is throwing him the ball, you think Dallas Clark is a 80-catch, 1,000-yard tight end? Absolutely not. Absolutely not at all. He's not very fast. Great hands. But his numbers should drop drastically. Well, they did last year. So how important is Peyton Manning? Those numbers tell you right there. Watch Dallas Clark's numbers. Fall off the face of the earth. It's going to be interesting. Your call. Let's go to Buckeye Bob, who has called in, by the way, on the program here on The Griff Show. Buckeye Bob, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How about you, Griff?
Doing well. What do you think?
I think this is good for only one group, and that's the group that's going to eventually attract Peyton Manning to their team. I think, you know, they're talking about this not a money issue. That is a bunch of bull crap. And how much money did Peyton Manning make the Irsay ownership group over the course of his career in Indianapolis?
You ready? Do you know the number? I know the number. Do you know it?
Oh, I'd be willing to bet it's in the, let's say roughly 60% more season passes per year. So it's probably $100 million a year.
All right, well, I don't know, but it's hard to gauge that. But I do know that the franchise, from where it was when he started to the value now, is up
right.
$233 million.
Okay. I mean, you and I both know if Peyton Manning's not there, their seat totals for the year, they're not filling the stands like they did when Peyton Manning was there. So, you know, for them to say it's not a money thing, and don't tell me it couldn't have been worked out, that's a bunch of crap, too, because Peyton Manning was not under contract. He was up for negotiation on his contract. So anything that they wanted to work out, they could have and should have worked out because he is the Indianapolis Colts franchise. And in my opinion, rookie quarterbacks should not start in the NFL. I know people are throwing out Dalton, and they're throwing out, you know, Tebow, and they're throwing out these names. Typically, in the history of the NFL, rookie quarterbacks do not fare well. The guys that come in, like Steve Young, that played for 5 or 6 years in the Canadian Football League and then came in and was an absolute star. Look at Tom Brady. It took him how many years before he was a starter? Brett Favre, as a rookie, was cut from Atlanta and got picked up by Green Bay. I mean, there's a long history. There's only a handful, and it's probably less than a handful, of quarterbacks that started as rookies and impacted the NFL and their team, and then went on to be superstar quarterbacks.
Yeah, and they say more already now, and perhaps that's true. Cam Newton had a good year and everything, but still, there's something about a rookie quarterback. They're not going to be where Peyton Manning is right now.
There's no doubt that Andrew Luck can be a great quarterback. But I'm going to tell you right now, the NFL has ruined more rookie quarterbacks that came out of college that had the stipulation that they were going to be great quarterbacks. Tim Couch is a prime example. That kid in college was awesome. And as soon as he got in the pros, they needed him. The Browns needed him. They put him in. They had no offensive line, which the Colts don't have a very good offensive line. And he just got crushed every play. He was either getting hit, sacked, rushed, whatever you want to call it. And he basically washed out of the NFL. This is the problem you have when you have a rookie quarterback that comes in and he's always trying to avoid a rush that's just about to kill him. And he needs 3 or 4 years, I think, before he can succeed as a quarterback that he's meant to be.
Yeah, and, their offensive line's not bad. It's not the best. Certainly they've had problems at left tackle. Tony Ugo and those other guys haven't worked out as of yet. I think they have a pretty young, talented tackle now. But, Peyton Manning did save them a lot of sacks by getting rid of the football. So it's kind of hard to judge their line. But I don't think it's a bad line, but it's not the best I've ever seen either. But point well taken. Look, no solid NFL quarterback. No rookie's going to come in and play like Alex Smith did last year. It's just not the way it is. Cam Newton can play great. He can throw for 4,000 yards. But his picks and interceptions were pretty close together. Now, they won more games than they thought. But in the end, he didn't make the plays he'll make 3 years from now. So your point's well taken. It's a maturity thing that just happens because of the scope of the job of quarterback in the NFL, right? That's just all there is to it. There's a learning curve there that you can't jump forward.
Right.
It's probably the best way to put it.
With Drew Brees and the Saints, with them labeling him the franchise player, can they still trade or cut him?
I think they can't do anything. He can't do anything until July. I think neither one of them could do anything until July 15th. I'll try to double-check that. But I think he's got to be there, and he's a property of theirs and theirs of his until he decides not to report and become a holdout. I think that's July 15th, but I can double-check that. That's a good question.
I'll tell you what, prior to them putting that franchise tag on him, I honestly thought a blockbuster, and he got released from a very good San Diego Charger team, but I was thinking a blockbuster is Archie Manning was a favorite son in New Orleans, and I guarantee you if the situation was right, Peyton Manning would love to play in New Orleans. How's that for a blockbuster bit of news coming out that maybe Peyton would get picked up by the New Orleans Saints?
Peyton getting picked up by the Saints instead of Brees? That would be huge.
Absolutely. Honestly, it would be a good fit for Peyton because that's a team that's pretty close to being ready to, strike again for the Super Bowl.
But they're losing guys now, though. With this franchise tag, they can't sign Carl Nix, who's a Pro Bowl guard. They probably can't sign Marcus Colston. They've got some issues there. Now, they're still strong.
Right.
There's no question about it. But they've got some holes there. And we all know that's not going to happen. There's no way they're going to get Peyton Manning and let Drew Brees go. That would be crazy.
Well, I don't know what it is, but Drew Brees definitely has that stigmatism where I never could understand why the Chargers gave up on the guy. I know they said shoulder, blah, 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 but look at what he's done since that point. He's probably one of the best passers in the NFL. But I just think Peyton Manning in New Orleans would be, unfortunately, it's not a good fit, but that would be a great story, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, it would be a crazy story is what it would be. It would be absolutely insane. It'd be about as unbelievable as us talking about Peyton Manning not being a Colt right now, which we didn't think would happen, right?
Yeah,
it would be bizarre.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking my call. Have a great one, and I'll give you a buzz here soon.
Good stuff. 23 minutes until the top of the hour here on The Griff Show. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more. Joe Dean coming up on the other side. Some SEC talk here on The Griff Show. Next hour, we'll talk a little MMA fighting coming to our town in Huntsville. Top of the hour. 5 o'clock hour, Don McNeil, former Bama great and Miami Dolphin great here on The Griff Show. Loaded show for you. Come on back.
The Griff Show.
Welcome back to The Griff Show here. Scott Griffin hanging out with our man. He's on radio programs everywhere. Does SEC Network, SEC Basketball for ESPN, and much more, ladies and gentlemen. And he's also the athletic director of Birmingham Southern. We always forget to say that. Joe Dean Jr. Joe D., how are you?
Great, Scott. How's everything with you?
Doing wonderful. We appreciate you taking time to do it.
Sure,
I know you're going to be
always
in New Orleans a bit later today and getting ready for the tournament. In many years, it's been the Kentucky Invitational. I guess there's no reason to expect it to be any different right now since they went through the league unscathed.
Well, they're awfully good, Scott. I think everybody thinks that they're the best team in the country. Certainly North Carolina, Syracuse, Kansas, Duke, Michigan State will all have a say about that when we get into the big dance. But right now, they're on an amazing winning streak. They're very talented. They play extremely hard, very competitive. They've taken on all comers in the SEC. And I think the SEC is a very underrated league this year. If you analyze, you know, they're saying that 10 Big East teams are going to get in the tournament. If you analyze how the SEC did this year against the Big East, winning record against Big East competition, Marquette, the number two seed, was beaten at home by Vanderbilt, was beaten on the road by LSU. I mean, I could go on and on. So I think the SEC is underrated, and I think the fact that Kentucky went to Vanderbilt and won, went to Florida and won convincingly, went to Mississippi State and won convincingly, I think says just how good they are.
Why is it underrated? Because it's been down for a few years now?
Yeah, I think so. The last 2 years hadn't been real good in the league, and we would all kind of agree. And traditionally, you know, football gets so much play. I think basketball gets lost in the shuffle a little bit down here, and we don't get the same respect that the Big East gets or the Big Ten or even the Big 12. So that's changing. It's getting better. We've got a lot of really good young players in this league, and of course, I think the addition of Texas A&M and Missouri is going to bring two really good basketball programs into the SEC to make it even stronger next year.
Who is likely, if it's not Kentucky, to have the wherewithal to make a run in this deal? I know it could be probably you'd name 8 or 9 teams, but do you have a feel at all?
Well, Scott, I've been touting Vanderbilt all year, you know, to my demise, because they've been disappointing. They've had a good year. They've won 20 games. They're going to make the tournament, but they were preseason ranked 7th in the nation, and I don't think they've lived up to their potential, and I don't think they've played as well as they're capable of playing. There's a lot of people think they're a little soft and disappear at times. That may be true, but I still say that in a tournament like this, where you have 3 games in 3 days, that Vanderbilt's got the makeup to beat Kentucky. They played them tough both times they played in Nashville and in Lexington. They actually led them in Lexington late in the game and end up losing by 6 or 7. So I think Vanderbilt's a team to keep an eye on, and I've actually gone on record as predicting that Vanderbilt will beat Kentucky in the final on Sunday.
Wow. Now, besides maturity, what is it that makes you think that? Or is it only maturity?
Yeah, maturity is the main reason. You know, they've got five seniors that have in their, and they would admit to you, these five seniors, I talked to Brad Tinsley after one of their games this year, their point guard. He said to them, we've underachieved. We've not achieved what we think we're capable of achieving. So there's a sense of urgency with the Vanderbilt team. This is their last go around. They're probably going to lose John Jenkins, the junior leading scorer in the league, to the pros next year. So they're going to lose six guys off this team, and this is their last shot. And I think they are hungry. I think they are talented. I think they have the shooters and the athletes to make a deep run in March. And I just all of that said, you know, Kentucky, at some point you figure they're going to slip up. You really hope that it happens in the SEC tournament and not in the NCAA tournament. So that's why I'm gonna go with Vandy in an upset over Kentucky on Sunday. You may remember it. I know you do, Scott. Back in 1996, when Kentucky was ranked number one in the country, went to New Orleans, ironically, to New Orleans, and Mississippi State knocked them off in the final and ended up making the Final Four that year under Richard Williams. So I see some similar things playing out here. Vanderbilt's made the semifinals of this tournament the last 2 years with these group of seniors, and I think they want to make it back to the final and prove that they're a good team.
Now, let's talk about day one, and you had something interesting this morning on that I didn't realize. Tell folks that little factoid about the day one matchups.
Well, all the day one matchups, all of the lower seeded teams have beaten the higher seeded teams in the regular season. You know, South Carolina beat Alabama, Georgia beat Mississippi State, Auburn beat Ole Miss, Arkansas is the lower seed, beat LSU
in
the regular season.
Yeah.
So, you know, the point of that is that, you know, anyone can win those games, really. And then they advance on to Friday to take on the top four seeds. So, you know, I think it's a great tournament. Tennessee's a hot team. They're going to be hungry. They're playing very well, and they're going to think they need to win two games to get to the big dance. I can see a Tennessee Vanderbilt semifinal on that side of the bracket, which could really be a great game. And I think Alabama has a chance to get to the semifinals against Kentucky in their side of the bracket. I'll be surprised if they don't knock off South Carolina, and I like their chances against Florida. I don't think Florida's playing very well right now. They've lost three straight games, and they've kind of limped into the tournament, and there's questions about their toughness. Alabama, you know, is not a great shooting team, but is athletic, and so I like Alabama's chances maybe to make it to the semifinal Saturday against Kentucky. And don't forget, Alabama played Kentucky tougher than any team in the league this year up in Lexington.
Yeah. And if the higher seeds win, then the second round is really good because it's Kentucky, LSU, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee against, I guess, Ole Miss, and then Vandy likely against Mississippi State. That is a stellar second round of days at the SEC tournament.
Yeah, and don't forget that Mississippi State beat Vanderbilt in Nashville during the regular season. That'll be a heck of a matchup. And again, why I like Vanderbilt, because I think Vanderbilt will be ready for that matchup with Mississippi State. They want to avenge that loss. Ole Miss is another dangerous team to keep an eye on. Very good front line. Senior guard in Nick Williams, who's from Mobile, a Fluor High School that has played very well the last couple of weeks. And don't discount Ole Miss. They're a dangerous team with their talent as well.
How has Tennessee done it, Quanzo Martin? They're 10-6 in the league, beat UConn at home, I think. How have they done that?
Well, Jarnell Stokes, the big 6'8", 250-pound freshman, joined the team in January. They did not have him at the start of their season. You know, he's that kid that graduated from high school in Memphis in December and enrolled at UT in January and started practicing on January the 9th with the team. 2 days later, played in the game against Kentucky, made his first four shots of the game, and has gotten better and better and better. I've seen him play twice in person. He is the real deal. This kid is big and physical and has good skills, can pass and shoot. He's an unbelievably nice young man, high character kid, military father. And I tell you, he's made a big difference in that team.
Joe Dean Jr., our guest for a few minutes, athletic director of Birmingham Southern, obviously on the SEC Network, talking about the SEC tournament, which begins Thursday in New Orleans. Mississippi State had some locker room problems, and Rick Stansbury acted like he didn't know what was happening. I find that hard to believe. I think that was a deflection thing. Doesn't speak well for what's going on there, but they are still dangerous. Just what about that situation?
Well, you're right, Scott. You got to remember the last nine SEC tournaments, Mississippi State has played in the finals four times in the last 9 years under Rick Stansberry. They've won it twice. In 2009, most recent, they won four games in 4 days down in Tampa to win the championship. So Mississippi State's always a dangerous team. Rick Stansberry's a good tournament coach, been a very good tournament coach in this particular tournament. He's got one of the best big men in the league in Arnett Moultrie. He's got arguably the best point guard in the league in Dee Bost. They've got some injuries of Rodney Hood, which is a concern. They've got a great shooter in Jalen Steele out of Knoxville who can really make shots. And then Renardo Sidney is the X factor. You know, he's obviously a big, strong, talented guy that doesn't play defense very well. And I think that's been a little bit of their problem. He doesn't guard well. They try to, you know, hide him in the defense. I think it's hurt their motivation a little bit. And as a result, they've not played very good defense here the last few weeks. And they've lost five of their last seven games.
Let's break down Alabama-Auburn a little bit. Auburn going against Ole Miss. Again, Andy Kennedy's team, dangerous. Auburn played Alabama pretty tough, a lot better than they did at home. But this is still a team, you know, that has some holes. They got some players, but they got some holes.
You're talking about Auburn, right?
Yeah,
no question. Auburn, you know, I've said this, and I don't apologize for saying this. I'd say this if Tony Barbie was listening in right now. They're not a very talented basketball team. They have limited talent. He inherited a lot of that. He's trying to make the best of it, trying to bring in some young players. He's got several freshmen that have been hurt all year that hadn't been able to play for him. He signed four guys for next year that he's very high on. And, you know, the Auburn situation is they've got to improve the talent level. Now, with that said, you know, they've played everybody pretty tough this year, even Kentucky. I mean, I did their Kentucky game, and it was a 4 or 5 point game going into the last 5 minutes. Kentucky ended up winning by double figures at the end, but you know, Auburn's a scrappy, hard nosed team. They play defense. If they can score some points, they have a chance. You know, I don't like their matchup against Ole Miss. I just think Ole Miss is a more physical team inside. I just think Ole Miss has more talent, and I'll be surprised if Ole Miss doesn't win this game.
And Alabama being the highest seed taking on South Carolina, one of their losses this year, just an ugly, bad loss. But that's the way Alabama can play when they're not shooting well. I would think they would have enough motivation besides being in the tournament and winning as many games as possible to take this one.
Yeah, well, you're right, Scott. I think motivation is the key in this game. I think Alabama will be highly motivated. South Carolina will not. South Carolina's not going anywhere. They're probably just ready to get the season over with. Alabama really needs to win this game. I mean, it would be a bad loss if they did not win it to the tournament committee. I like Alabama to win this game easily on Thursday.
Now, talk a little bit about when Alabama hit shots, they're really good. It's just when they hit shots, right? I mean, basically, is their key.
Yeah, they've had some games where they've shot the ball well. They had a lot of them, but they've
right.
had some games. I watched them play here in Birmingham back in December against Oklahoma State, and they made six of their first seven threes and won by 18 points, you know. And as good as they defend, and let's face it, when you make shots, your defense is better. That's just the way it works. I mean, it's easier to defend when you're leading and you're ahead in the game than if you're behind and you're having to scratch and grind it out. So the shooting for Alabama is always going to be the key for them. They're athletic. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league, them and Kentucky, and they rebound the ball. So, you know, I like the Alabama team. You'd love to see them shoot it better, but I think that's something they're just going to have to continue to work at.
If I said who's getting in, do you have five for sure and Tennessee trying to, or is Tennessee Mississippi State? We've got to see how they do in this tournament, or how do you read that?
Well, I think five in. I mean, Joe Lunardi has Mississippi State in, one of the last teams in, and I go with what he says. He's been very prophetic in how he predicts all these things. Tennessee, he is saying, has to win two games in New Orleans, make the championship in order to get in. If they do that, I think they will be in, because that would give them 20 wins. And you know, I don't think anybody expects anyone to beat Kentucky down there. So it's a big weekend for Alabama, Mississippi State, and Tennessee. Florida, he needs to probably do well to improve their seeding in the tournament. They probably slipped from a third or fourth seed team to probably a fifth or sixth seeded team. So, and then Vanderbilt. You're looking at Vanderbilt, who, again, I think wants to prove that they're a good team and that they deserve to be a higher seeded team in the NCAA.
Is there a scenario where Alabama could be a 7? Because obviously there's a huge difference between 7 and 8 and 9, the way brackets are set up for the NCAAs.
Yeah, I think they can get to 7, but they need to win a couple of games in New Orleans. I think if they could win the first game and then beat Florida, who is a highly respected team nationally in the quarterfinals on Friday, I think that would move Alabama up a little bit. So, again, like I said, it's an important weekend for Alabama.
And do you see, finally, Big Ten champion, ACC champions, being the number one seed along with Syracuse, Kentucky? Is that how you figure?
You know, I don't really know. I think a lot's going to determine by these tournaments. You're looking at probably, of course, Syracuse, Kentucky for sure. Then after that, Duke or North Carolina, Michigan State, Kansas, maybe Missouri. Those are the teams that, you know, and again, I don't put a lot of stock in who's number one. To me, if you're either the one or the two seed, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, two is really number one of that side.
Exactly.
Right?
That's right.
I mean, so there you go. Well, Joe, thanks. Tell people what you're going to be doing. The first day, you'll be studio hosting
Actually, the first 2 days, Thursday and Friday. I'm on the studio set, which is, you know, that built-in platform in the arena. I'll be on there with Dari Noka and Barry Booker. We'll be breaking down all the games Thursday and Friday, you know, between games at halftime and all that. And then Saturday I move over to radio, and we'll call the semifinals and the championship game on radio with Brad Sham, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys.
Will you be dressed well?
You know, Hong Kong Tailors is my tailor. Ram Kripalani, I'm the sharpest announcer in the country. It's not even close. You know that, Scotty.
Joe, thank you. Safe travels today. I know you're going to enjoy it and love it and get some good food while you're down there. We appreciate you hanging out with us.
All right, Scott. Always good to talk with you. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Joe Dean Jr. with the SEC Network on ESPN does a great job. There's no better analyzing SEC basketball than Joe D. I do want to tell you that there's no better company that can save you money than First Family Mortgage and Conrad Thompson. Call Conrad today and the folks over there at 425-0105 or go check out their website at 1FMC.com. When you talk to my friends over there, they're going to take care of you. Either way it goes, they're going to either cut some term, and when you cut term, obviously, you're talking about going from a what we call a 25-year. If you're 5 years into your 30, a 25-year to a 15 or to a 20. And cutting term obviously makes you own your house faster. Plus, it helps you pay less interest. So if you go, well, Griff, you know, I don't know if I'm going to stay in this house forever, it still helps to cut term because you're paying more towards your principal with a lower loan. A lower-term loan, and many can save tens of thousands of dollars. That's what First Family Mortgage is there to do, run the numbers for you. So it's a free call. It's just a few minutes of your time to see if they can help you out. Now, if it's just cash flow that's killing you, they can save you tons of money. Tons of money. They've saved people $400, $500, $600 a month. That is major cash savings. In these difficult times, you want to be sure that your house, your investment, is handled the best way. So call the folks at First Family Mortgage, 425-0105, or you can go to the website if that's easier for you, at 1FMC.com. And don't forget, they stay open till 9 o'clock tonight, and then open all day on Saturdays. First Family Mortgage. Give them a call. We'll take a break. Come back with more of the Griff Show on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Basketball hungry and basketball crazy right now on the Griff Show. We'll be back.